All right, now I'm going to be reading from the King James Version today. And our text will be in the New Testament. We've been in the Old Testament for a couple of weeks, learning from the prophets Jonah and Haggai. And that was some good stuff. We learned about the Lord. We learned in Jonah how tender-hearted God is, how merciful he is, and how that fish for Jonah was God's version of mercy on his behalf. And we learn from Haggai that God, just like Sister Bonnie says, he has feelings too, and God didn't like the fact that we were living in the lap of luxury and his house lay in ruins. So God did make us in his own image. He gave us feelings, but he has feelings too. And so today we're going to be looking at the book of Luke chapter 8, verses 41 through 48. But our key verses are verses 45 and 46. And so the question that I want you to be contemplating as we prepare for the word, and the question that you may want to answer before we're done, is, what is your issue? What is the issue in your life for which you know you need the Lord, and yet you haven't gotten a resolution? What is your issue? Now, the text that we're going to be learning from today is, again, as is often the case, a very common text, a very well-known text. And my prayer is that the Lord will illuminate your minds, that he will reveal himself through his word here today, and that you would leave here changed. Amen? Amen. So we're going to consider the text beginning at verse 41. But before we do that, briefly, we want to set the overall context. So Jesus has been healing, and we find him here in the country of the Gadarenes, and he has just exorcised a legion, a large number of demons, devils, out of a man there. As a result of this, this man was so demon-possessed that the fact that Jesus could pull this off made the people fearful. They wanted any parts of him. However, after he went out to the ship and came back the next day, they had a change of heart and they happily received him. And it says this in verse 40. And it came to pass that when Jesus was returned, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him on the shore, basically. And that's where the text brings us to a subject that actually will go alongside our key subject, but it's not the main subject. Verse 41 says, and behold, at this point, there came a man named Jairus. And he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet. And he besought him, basically asking him, begging him, that he would come to his house. For he had only one daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was laying there dying. But as he went, the people thronged him. So what do we get from this backdrop of our scenario? Obviously, Jesus is taking this gentleman up on his request. He's going to tend to this dying young girl. He's trying to get there to the house as the girl is dying. There's not much time left. Really, it's a desperate situation. But as Jesus attempts to go to Jairus's house, he can't quite make much headway because these same people who were afraid of him now are thronging him. They're all around. He can't press because of the crowd. And so, if nothing else, we're reminded of how fickle we can be. We're reminded of the fact that people who might be against you or afraid of you or intimidated by you might very well be your advocate the very next day. But really, it's just the setup to what the scripture is really all about, to what this text is really all about. Really, the most remarkable thing about this fact is that Jesus really does intend to go and take care of this young woman. So what do you think would he allow to get in his way? What might delay Jesus beside the crowd, which is what we're going to learn here? In verse 43, the word says, and a woman, we're being introduced now to another key player in this act. We have Jairus, we have Jesus, we have the people in the crowd, but now we have introduced this central character, this woman, this unnamed woman, who had an issue of blood for 12 years, which she had spent all of her living upon physicians, but neither could they heal her. Or the King James says, neither could be healed of any. So let's just take a moment and understand who this woman is. Now, she's not named, but what we do know about her is she had what the King James called an issue of blood, which is why I say, what is your issue? Now, it's a play on words because the word issue here doesn't really tell you what was really going on. This word translated issue really means flow, excessive flow. She had a hemorrhagic problem. Basically, she had a female problem that caused her to menstruate all too heavily and all too often. Not your normal menstrual cycle. Now, why does this matter? Is it because she lost blood? Yes, that matters. But more importantly, if you understand the true traditional historical context, in Jewish life, when a woman was menstruating, she was ceremonially unclean. She couldn't be around everybody else and do all the things that people did in society. And so if she bled excessively, all too heavily and all too often, not only would she be anemic and therefore weak and tired and maybe even dizzy, but she was also lonely. She was also somewhat of an outcast. She did not have a life that was as full as we would want to have, and certainly as full as she would have. Now, it's not for lack of trying. She got as much help as she could from the physicians there. Now, here's another thing that we know without the text telling us. With the medical knowledge that we have available to us, and certainly that I have, I know that medicine at that time really revolved around sorcery and also pharmacy. Pharmacy's always been around. Herbal medicine has always been around. But the herbs were not going to fix this lady's problem. It wasn't chemical. It wasn't pharmacological. It is almost certainly anatomical. She likely had a tumor that caused her to continue to bleed. Chemistry was not going to fix her. She needed a surgeon, and they didn't do surgery back then. If they did, the person would die certainly of infection. She needed something that at her time didn't exist, couldn't be brought to bear on her situation. But it didn't stop her from trying, but she spent all of her money on these physicians. Now, we can't blame her for not going to Jesus first for her solution. But even if she didn't know Jesus as a Jew, she had no excuse. She certainly could have gone to God. But what we do know is that she spent everything that she had trying to get her problem solved, and now she comes to encounter Jesus. Do you have anything that you've tried everything but Jesus to solve? That is the question. What is your issue? It's not the only question, but it's the question I want you to be contemplating right now. What is your issue that you're still trying to solve every way but through Jesus? What is your thing that you are holding on to? What is your thing that you're trying to solve with your might or through human wisdom and methodology? What is your issue? What is your thing you need to link up with Jesus about? What is your thing you need to take to the altar and turn your back on it forever and leave it to God? So we have this woman with this hemorrhagic problem for 12 years that has kept her out of a great deal of her community events. And she spent all that she has. She's done all that she can do. She's at the end of her rope. But what I'm here to tell you today is that that's not a bad place to be. We don't enjoy it. We don't like it. But the best position you can be in the position where you know that you know that you know that you know you can't do it and that you know one who can. That's critical. Not think, not contemplate, not wonder, but know. You must know that there is one that can deliver you. And so this woman is a Jewish woman, and so she may not have realized who Jesus really was, but she knew that he was a teacher. She knew he must be a prophet because of the miracles that he was able to perform. And so she knew that there was some connection between Yahweh God and this teacher. She didn't know he was the Messiah. She didn't know that her spiritual salvation had to come through him. But there's something she did know. She knew what she was doing wasn't working. She knew she wanted to be in society. She knew she was tired of bleeding. She knew her issue was wearing her out. She also knew that there was something about this man. Yes, she was among those who were afraid of him. But they're not afraid anymore. And that's why we see them thronging Jesus, literally holding him up from going to do a good thing. And the girl lay dying in the meanwhile. So now that we understand this woman and her issue, we understand the fact that she's tried everything else. And now we're going to get a chance to learn from the situation where she decides. That's a critical moment in your life when you decide, when you realize that your way is not going to work. Critical time in your life to try something else. And so we see in verse 44, says, came behind him, so this is the same woman, and touched the border of his garment. Some versions might say the hem of his garment, a garment meaning a robe that you would have worn at that time. And immediately, somebody say immediately, her issue of blood, in the King James it says staunched, that just means stopped. Her hemorrhaging stopped immediately. So if you have an issue, you now know that immediately God can rid you of that issue. But what you don't know yet is how that will come about. You know that it can happen, but the word hasn't yet revealed to us why that would happen. She came up behind him, pressing through the crowd, thinking in her heart and in her mind, if I can only just touch the hem of his garment, I think I'll be all right. I've tried everything else. If I can just touch, I may not have a conversation with him, But if I can just touch the hem of his garment, understand the hem is also at the bottom. So she is either crawling or she's been knocked to the ground by this crowd. But her pride has been laid aside. She doesn't care what it looks like. She doesn't care what people think of her. All she knows is she's got an issue that she can't solve. She's done all that she can do, and she's willing to swallow her pride, prostrate herself, and crawl along the ground if necessary to just get a touch of the hem of the garment of this great man who's come into her country and who's healing folks and casting out demons. And the word says, as she reached out and touched the border of his garment, immediately she was delivered of her problem. Now, we're going to learn now exactly how and why you can be delivered from your issue by understanding how and why she was delivered from hers. And so we go to verse 45. I told you 45 and 46 were the most critical ones, and now we have the background and the understanding that's necessary to fully absorb what there is to learn here. Verse 45, and Jesus said, "Who touched me?" He wants to know. Now he's on his way to take care of some business. There was a girl dying. There was a crowd to press through. There are many people there. But Jesus is willing, for some reason, to stop everything because I've got to know who this is that's touched me. I want you to think about that. We're talking about Jesus. We're talking about a dire circumstance that he is going to resolve, and he's willing to put all that on hold for a reason. Wouldn't you want the Lord, wouldn't you want anyone to put, if you had a dire circumstance, if you had a problem, wouldn't you want that person to stop and make you the most important thing? So the question is, how do you make that happen? Now, we can think of all sorts of sinful ways to get somebody's attention. But we see here that Jesus has a girl dying on the one end. And this woman isn't dying. She is desperate, however. But there's something about the situation that caused Jesus to hold up from going to help a dying girl, who, by the way, by the time he got there, she was supposedly dead. Something got Jesus' attention. You want to get his attention? Do you all want to get his attention? And so Jesus says, "Who touched me?" So we know that it matters to him. But then when all denied, meaning I didn't touch you, no, I didn't touch you. I didn't touch you, no, I didn't touch you. Peter's always the one that speaks up. Peter and they who were with him said, "Master, the multitude throng thee and press up against thee, and sayest thou, who touched me?" Everybody's touching you. Why would you stop and say, "Who touched me?" It doesn't make any sense. This is usually when they would end up with egg on their face, but at this point in time, they're saying, "Master, what in the world are you talking about? There's just this big crowd. And you say, who touched you?" Why would you even ask a question like that? Well, that's what we're going to learn here today. Now, in order to understand why Jesus would ask this question, let's first understand what this word "touched" actually means. The word that's translated "touch" here is the word haptomai, H-A-P-T-O-M-I. H-A-P-T-O-M-A-I, haptomai. And while it could be used to describe any kind of touch, its most accurate definition would be to attach oneself to, to cling or adhere or fasten to, or to latch onto. So now, we've got multiple people in this circumstance, all with differing perspectives. The event is what it is. We have all of the people who are pressing up against Jesus, who, when he says, "Who touched me?" they all understood what he meant. This happens a lot. The disciples didn't get it. They knew when he said, "Who touched me?" They were all pressing up against him. They knew he wasn't talking about that. The disciples, they weren't too smart all the time. They got real smart after in the book of Acts. But they weren't so smart during this time. They said, "All these people, what do you mean? Who touched you? Everybody's touching you." But they all denied it. So that's their perspective. The disciples are imagining, well, everybody's touching you. And Jesus, the critical thing is, he knew the difference. And he knows the difference as well today. So Jesus says, "Somebody touched me." Haptomai. Someone has attached themselves to me. Someone is clinging to me, adhering to me, fastening themselves to me, laying hold on me, not merely touching me, not just merely coming into contact with me, casually, incidentally, without purpose and meaning. And so now we get Jesus' response. We now know that the disciples said, "What in the world would you ask a question like that for?" We know that the people who were in contact with Jesus understood that, "No, I didn't touch you." And yet we have Jesus saying, "Who touched me?" We know he cares. He wants to know about this person who has touched him in this way. And so Jesus said, and this is, of course, always the right, the most critical piece when Jesus speaks, he says, "Somebody hath touched me." And then he goes on to explain to the disciples, since they didn't understand, he had to give a reason. He had to give an explanation. He says, "Somebody has touched me, for I perceive that virtue has gone out of me." Now, Jesus is explaining why he knows that someone has literally attached themselves to him. He knows that someone has adhered to him, that someone has latched on to him. He says, "I perceive," and that word really is more, "I know." I don't want you to think that because they translated it "perceive," that it means that Jesus thinks or he wonders, because the literal translation would be, "I know." I know that somebody has touched me, because I know that virtue, that word is dunamis, which means power, has flowed from me. So I know that somebody has touched me, because there is only one way that I could be going, pressing through a crowd, that I could be going with a girl dying, with someone desperately needing my help. There is only one reason, one way, that while I'm pressing in one direction, that my dunamis would be flowing away from me in the opposite direction. There's only one way. So I know that I know that I know. I don't just perceive. I know that someone has touched me. Someone has reached out and latched on to me. It's different from the rest of the crowd. It's not incidental. It's purposeful, intentional. Not just wanting to be around me, not just wanting to know me, not just wanting to press up against me, not just wanting something, but wanting something from me and no one else. I know that for someone here, I'm not just a do-gooder. I'm not just a miracle worker. From somebody here, I am the only solution. Somebody's made up their minds that I'm the one that they need. Somebody's dropped their pride enough to be low enough onto the ground to grab onto my garment while everyone else presses up against my torso. Somebody's touched me. And I need to know who. This doesn't happen every day. Look at all the miracles that were performed in the Bible, particularly by Jesus. How many of them were involuntary? Tell me another miracle that he performed where he did not intend himself to perform. Jesus has something else in mind. He's going somewhere else to do something else for someone else. But this got his attention where he had to know, who is this person that touches me this way? That touches me in a way that my healing power, dunamis, virtue had to flow. That's a special kind of touch. I think you would want to have that kind of touch. I think you'd want to know what triggers that kind of touch. So Jesus says, look, fellas, I know what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from, but somebody's touched me. Now, they can't see the person who's touching him like that because they're moving forward with him and she's on the ground. She thinks she's hidden. She didn't want to bring attention to herself. She just wanted Jesus. She didn't want a position in the synagogue or the temple or in society. She just wanted Jesus. She didn't want anything special. She wanted her issue resolved, and she knew Jesus was the answer. That's all she wanted. She tried to stay in the background. She tried to stay hidden even after she knew that blood had stopped flowing. And so Jesus says, look, I know somebody has touched me. And how does he know? He knows because involuntarily his power, his healing, dunamis power, has flowed from him. And so many came into contact with Jesus here, but only one person really touched him. And what I want you to be mindful of is that Jesus knows the difference. He knows the difference between those who are merely in the crowd and those who really want him. He knows the difference between those who are like cows, would go in a herd and go in whatever direction a herd's going in, and someone who would literally humble themselves enough to get just the hem of his garment, those who really want him. If you're dating someone, you know the difference between the one who wants to hook up with you because you can pay for them to go to a fancy place, have a great dinner, and alleviate their boredom, and someone who just wants you. Just wants time with you. Just enjoys you. And when they're with you, they're not thinking about someplace else they could be, because the thing that they want, the hole they're trying to fill, can only be filled by you. Jesus knows the difference. And so no matter how big the church gets, or a church gets, no matter how fanciful we get, no matter how accepted we become so that we can fill big stadiums, look, Jesus knows the difference, even in the crowd. He's not confused. He doesn't have to wait until we separate and go our separate ways. In the midst of the crowd, he knows the difference. And you should know this, that Jesus knows the difference. And you should also know that if you are that one, when you are that one, Jesus will respond, even if he was planning something else. That kind of longing, that kind of faith is irresistible, is what we've learned. It's irresistible. If you want Jesus, if that's who you want, and the one that you want them to find you irresistible, right? So what do? It must be clear that all the other options are not on the table, just you. For whatever the reason, you're done with the other things. Your mind is not anywhere else. You're willing to say, I love you. You're willing to do those things that you may not want to do. It ain't about you. So you will get down on your knees if necessary to attach yourself to that person. And we know that based on this text that Jesus finds this kind of faith irresistible, this kind of attachment, this kind of relationship that she was initiating irresistible. Jesus did not decide to have his virtue, his dunamis healing power flow from him. He was on his way somewhere else. She came up from behind. He did not know she was there. The only reason that he came to know is because she haptomized him, attached herself intentionally, purposefully to him, and only him. Now I'll read the last couple verses and then we'll bring it home. And when the woman saw that she was not hid, she came trembling. And falling down before him, she declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him. So she revealed what her problem was and how she was healed immediately. Verse 48, and he said unto her, daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace. Jesus has what he wanted now. He wanted to know, who is this person? Among all these people, I just need to know who this is. He was impressed. He was moved. I'm reminded of the centurion that had faith in terms of having his daughter healed. And Jesus said he hadn't seen that kind of faith anywhere in Israel. Why? Because this man knew what kind of power, what kind of leadership, what kind of authority he was dealing with. And even the disciples didn't understand who Jesus was that way. Here again, we're seeing something that touches Jesus, something that moves Jesus. The more we understand what moves Jesus, what triggers his emotions, what gets his attention, the more we come to understand Jesus himself. And so, along with the question I asked you to answer, what is your issue? Now, alongside that question, you can ask and answer for yourselves. With whatever your issue is, are you merely in the crowd? Are you just going to church, calling yourself a Christian, whatever, singing in the choir, bumping up against Jesus, coming into contact with him, maybe more than some others? And yet, not really touching him, not really attached to him, not really needing him to solve your problem, to fill your void. Anything will do. If I can solve it some other way, that would be great. But when you get to that place, and God will allow your life to go a certain way, that we will resent, be frustrated with, and hate. But he'll allow you to get to that place where you are willing to swallow your pride because you realize who he is and who you are and whose you are. And you come to understand that he is the only true solution, the only real solution, the only lasting solution to your problem. Understand how Jesus sees you at that time, at the moment that you feel less than everybody else, at the moment that you feel weaker than everybody else, at the moment that you feel not as good as everybody else. Jesus sees you as a giant. Because now we can really get some things done. Now, even if I was planning something else, you're going to get your needs met. If I have to stop everything, if I have to stop the world from turning, I got to know who this person is. And so finally, the question that we have to ask ourselves is not so much whether Jesus has ever moved you, whether or not you've ever been moved emotionally or otherwise because of Jesus, because of a miracle, because of your relationship with him, even maybe. The question that you have to ask and answer for yourself is, have you ever moved Jesus? Has he ever been moved by you, by your decisions, by your comportment, by your actions, by where your head was at? Has he been moved by your relationship? Has he been moved to stop everything and pay attention to you? Not because you're perfect, but because you realize you're not. But because you realize he is your source. And nothing else will do. That's the question. What is your issue? What is your thing that you need to give to Jesus? What is your thing that you need to swallow your pride about and get Jesus' attention? What is it? Everybody's got something different. There's beautiful life on the other side of that decision. When you say, you know what? I know my God is awesome. I know he created the universe and me. I know that he knew me before I was conceived, and I know he had a plan for me before I was born. I know that. And yes, I've gone wayward. I've gone my own direction, making up my own mind, making my own decisions, living according to my flesh, seeking out help everywhere else but God. But you know what? I'm changing my mind. Metanoia. I realize that my way, my path, my methodology is not going to work. And you know what? I don't need just one more potion. I don't need just one more methodology. I don't need just one more solution. I need the solution. And I need to be desperate about it. I need to act as if I'm not going to assume that Jesus is going to come by this way every day. I'm not going to assume I'm going to wake up every day and be in my right mind where I can make this decision. I'm going to act in desperation. I'm going to act on this moment. Carpe diem. I'm going to seize this moment, and I'm going to have my Lord be my solution. He's not only your salvation spiritually, but he is your salvation here every day. He is the only way, the only means by which you can really fulfill your potential and you can really live out your destiny. But if that destiny isn't important enough to you, you will not humble yourself. You will not crawl to Jesus, and you will not desperately seize this day to reach out and truly touch him.